Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson, and the NFL season is now complete. Last night, the Philadelphia Eagles pull off the upset. They topped the New England Patriots 41-33. Travis, I would say I'm not surprised. I thought it would be a close game. I picked New England to win this game, but I thought it would be close. Not surprised there at all. I was surprised at what direction the game went, considering that we had 74 points scored. Offensively, it was the biggest show in the history of the NFL. That surprises me a little bit. But at the end of the day, the Eagles are Super Bowl champs, and they worked their way through the NFC playoffs and the Super Bowl as the underdog. Nick Foles, your Super Bowl MVP. Anything is possible. I think that's what Kevin Garnett once said. Anything is possible. He's 100% correct.
Yeah, and I'm a moron because I kept writing Philadelphia off. I said they were going to be one and done. Didn't think they had a chance to win. Thought they'd get blown out in the Super Bowl. So I'm an idiot for picking against the Eagles. But credit Philadelphia. They went in. They had an attack on offense where they weren't shy. Third down, fourth down, didn't matter. They were going to go after New England. Didn't let the foot off the pedal. Kind of like Seattle and Atlanta did in the past. And they get through. And Bill Belichick was out-coached last night.
I don't know that he was out-coached. I don't know if I'm going to go that far. But I will say this, and I think you're right. In regards to Peterson keeping the pedal to the metal, they go for it twice on fourth down last night. Both times they pick it up. New England had multiple opportunities to get Philadelphia off the field. They couldn't do it. There were a couple of big third down conversions in this game. I compare Doug Peterson's coaching job last night to what Sean Payton did with New Orleans against Indianapolis. Okay, I know he had Drew Brees. Completely different in that regard, considering that Peterson had Nick Foles. But remember how aggressive Sean Payton and the Saints were in that game where they beat Peyton Manning?
Yeah, the onside kick.
The onside kick. I mean, there were several instances in that game where Sean Payton played to not lose and played to win, did not play to not lose, if that makes sense. And I think that Doug Peterson, he learned from Doug Marrone's mistake in the AFC Championship because Jacksonville had New England beat and they decided to take the ball out of their quarterback's hands. They played it safe. You put the ball back in Tom Brady's hand. He was able to take the Patriots down, score a touchdown. They win the game. They go to the Super Bowl. Doug Peterson told himself and his team going into this game, if we lose, it's going to be because of me. If we have to go for it on fourth down, we will go for it on fourth down. If we can keep them off the field, we're going to do everything we can to keep them off the field. Now, they still gave up 33 points, but because of his aggressiveness on the offensive side of the ball, and again, we've talked about the deficiencies that New England has defensively, and they have all year long.
They give up a lot of chunk plays.
They definitely do. Philly was able to take advantage of that last night. That's where the game was won. And of course, still today, reporters are asking Bill Belichick, why did Malcolm Butler not play last night? He played one special team snap. Would it have made that much of a difference? You and I were talking about this before we hopped on the air. Would it have made that much of a difference if Malcolm Butler plays in this game?
Malcolm Butler wasn't very good this year. He gave up a lot of plays downfield, a lot of touchdowns. But where they miss Malcolm Butler the most over Jordan Richards is Malcolm Butler's their best tackler on the field. So open field tackle. They had a chance. It was 3rd and 7, I believe. And they threw a little 4 or 5 yard out where Jordan Richards missed a tackle and it goes for 13, 14 yards. That's where Malcolm Butler makes that play there. So does he make a difference? I'm going to say kind of, maybe, perhaps.
Maybe. I don't think they win the game.
No.
I really don't. I don't think... Eric Rowe wasn't bad yesterday. He wasn't bad.
No, but you're asking a lot for a guy you tell him right before kickoff that he's starting.
and playing the entire game.
Yeah, and playing the whole game where he's not used to that.
I agree. I mean, and we'll talk more about the aftermath of today's game a little bit later on in the show. But looking at it from a New England standpoint, really, I mean, there were a lot of flubs in the first half of this game for New England. Goskett, the special teams was terrible in the first half.
Yeah, yeah, a missed field goal and a missed extra point.
It was terrible for New England in the first half. And then I look at where Philadelphia was moving. Right off of the bat, if you're a Patriot fan, though, even with the mishaps, you had to feel comfortable with where the game was going. Because Philly moves the ball right down the field to open up the game. They get inside, what, the five-yard line, couldn't score. Then you had the flub up on the field goal. You had the missed extra point. There were so many errors for New England at the beginning of this game, yet Philadelphia, for the most part, kept control. But defensively, where they have been good all year long, they forced another big turnover. And we can talk about Nick Foles and what the future holds for Nick Foles. I want to go back to a game. And to me, it's this simple with the Eagles. The game that got them to the Super Bowl. We go back to the regular season. The game in which Carson Wentz got hurt. That's the game that got them to the Super Bowl. Think about this. Because, okay, Wentz gets hurt, and they're playing the Rams on the road. And at that particular time, it was for the top spot in the NFC, if I remember right. Wentz gets hurt. Foles comes in. Does very little in that game, but did just enough for them to win. And Doug Peterson didn't fully trust him at that particular time. They played it very safe. Defensively, they come up with a strip on Goff. They win the game. Remember that?
Yep.
Put them in the driver's seat, right? Does Philly get to the Super Bowl if they don't have home field advantage with Nick Foles? I don't think so.
I don't think they do either.
But from that point on, Peterson started adding a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more to Foles' plate. And by the time he got to the NFC Championship, let him have fun. It's your offense.
Let him rip it.
And he did. And he played very well. And I thought they were finished when Wentz went down. And I'm going to say this, too. Proof of just how terrible of a coach Jeff Fisher has been in the latter part of his career. Think about it.
Jeff Fisher's bad.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Jared Goff, think about it.
And he wants credit for it.
And as far as Nick Foles goes, I was wrong. 100% wrong on Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. Of course, we're going to talk more about this game a little bit later. Here's a couple of questions for you to ponder. Are the Patriots done? Is the Patriot dynasty done? Okay, look, in the NBA, I think the Spurs dynasty's finished.
I'm with you on that one.
And that's a direct correlation. Think about that question. We'll dissect it a little bit later on. Was this the last chance for the Patriots, for Tom Brady to get number 6? We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Plus, where do the Eagles go next? Because you've heard all the Super Bowl talk now that the game is over. Go more abstract with it. Do you keep Nick Foles? Do you trade him? Nobody is talking about trading Carson Wentz. Nobody. Because that would be idiotic to trade that guy at this particular time. He was the MVP frontrunner when he went down. When he suffered that knee injury in LA, he was the frontrunner to win the MVP. So think about those two questions. The Eagles and the Patriots side of you. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Also joining us today, we're going to talk to Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory High School Wrestling Squad. Emory traveled to Richfield over the weekend for the divisional meet. You had to finish in the top 8 in each bracket in order to get to the state. Emory took 18 wrestlers, 15 qualified for the state finale this weekend. We're going to talk to Coach Christiansen about that in just a few moments. Now, some other news coming out of the NFL today. The Detroit Lions have officially hired Matt Patricia as their new head coach. That means he is finished in New England. Defensive coordinator, who's a rocket scientist, literally is now the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, the 27th head coach in the franchise's history. 43 years old, spent his entire coaching career in New England. Remember, he was an offensive assistant, worked his way up to defensive coordinator by 2012. He made 3 Super Bowl runs with the Patriots defense. I love the hire. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like to hire two for Detroit. They get a guy that they wanted all along. He's a good defensive mind. So for Detroit, it's going to be a fresh breath air there in Detroit with Matt Patricia.
When you talk about Matt Patricia going to Detroit, you also have to mention Bob Quinn, who's a Lions general manager, because he's cut from that New England cloth.
Mm-hmm.
This is his guy. And we knew eventually that Bob Quinn would be turning to somebody from that New England coaching tree, from the Bill Belichick coaching tree, because it's Bob Quinn. That's his guy. So, again, Matt Patricia, no longer the defensive coordinator in New England. now officially the head coach of the Detroit Lions, and you were just telling me before we hopped on air about the potential replacement for Patricia as defensive coordinator.
Yeah, Greg Schiano, all reports that he's going to take over. Him and Bill Belichick are really good friends, so look for Greg Schiano to leave Ohio State, take over in New England.
As far as Josh McDaniels goes, he hasn't officially been named head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. You think he takes that job?
I think so, but it's just weird that nothing's been announced, kind of like Matt Patricia got announced today, and nothing from the Colts or Josh McDaniels. And they asked Belichick today in the conference call, and he's like, I have no clue. He hasn't said anything to me.
Rumblings came out last night that he may not take that Indianapolis job. And just a quick note on this. If you have your choice between working for Bob Kraft and working for Irsay, who are you going to go with? I mean, obviously.
Bob Kraft.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't trust Irsay at all. I'd probably stay away from that job if I was Josh McDaniels. But
you have Andrew Luck, but you don't know what kind of Andrew Luck. You don't know what Andrew Luck you're going to have, right? I mean, there's probably some legitimate concern there for Josh McDaniels. And the thing to remember, if Bill Belichick is at the end of his career in New England, Josh McDaniels has got to be the front runner for that job.
So, yeah, he slide right into that spot.
Yeah, it's something to think about. Let's take a look at the schedule tonight in the NBA. Full slate. We begin in the 5 o'clock hour. We get Portland at Detroit. Washington will travel on the road to take on the Pacers. We get Miami playing host to Orlando. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. 5:50 tonight, the Jazz will be on the road to take on the Pelicans at 6 p.m. We get Charlotte at Denver. The Bulls will take on Sacramento. And then the nightcap tonight, Dallas at the Clippers. That's a check of what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to give you the local sports recap in just a moment. Plus, we'll be joined by Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Spartan Wrestling Squad when we return. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. This past Friday and Saturday, the Emory and Carbon High School wrestling teams traveled to the Sevier Valley Center in Richfield to participate in the regional tournament. Each participating wrestler had to finish in the top eight in order to qualify for this weekend's state championship meet. For Emory High School, Dwayne Farley and Jaron Allen both qualified to the 106-pound weight class. Farley finished third, while Allen finished in fourth. At 113, Corby Christiansen and James Ovison both qualified. Christiansen was second, Ovison sixth. Drake Mangum qualified for state at 120 pounds. He finished fifth. At 126, it was Chase Christiansen's sixth place finish, getting him to the next round. At 132, Zach World qualified with a third place finish. At 138, Briar Macarello finished fifth with a 2-2 record to advance to the state championship meet. McKay Macarello finished in second at 145 pounds, finishing with a 3-1 mark. Gus Dalton qualified, finishing third in the 152-pound weight class. Newt Ovison finished second in the 170-pound weight class. Braden Howard finished eighth at 182, and A.C. Reeve was a divisional champion at 285, while teammate Drake Hoffman finished in third with a 3-1 record. For Carbon High School, Estacia Gomez finished in 7th in the 106-pound weight class to qualify for the state championship. It was Bradley Judd finishing 3rd at 113 pounds. The 126-pound weight class had Caden Lee and Caden Gibson finishing 5th and 7th to advance. Casey Shiner was a division champion at 132 pounds. He defeated Jed Lee from South Summit 10-4 by decision for the title. Bobby Blake also qualified for state, finishing 7th at 132 pounds. Caleb Sanderson finished fourth at 138, while Bradley Judd finished second in the same weight class. Connor Fawcett logged a third place finish at 154. Keaton Hunt and Nathan Cowley finished fifth and seventh at 152 pounds to advance. It was Jacob Barlow's fifth place finish at 160 pounds that will qualify him for state, while Josiah Martinez finished seventh, and at 285, Blake Grundy finished eighth. Congratulations to those who have qualified to the state championship meet. We'll catch up with Coach Kurt Christiansen and also Coach Brock Fawcett in the coming days to preview the weekend finale for wrestling. We move over to high school basketball, and Friday night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m., the Emory Spartans suffered a 76-71 loss to the Manti Templars. Tied at 54 going into the fourth and final quarter, it was Manti that pulled away. The Spartans suffered the loss despite the fact that Kyson Stilson scored 24 points, Brex Jensen finished with 17, and Cade Brazier added 13. The loss for Emory moves them to 4-6 overall in the region play, entering the final week of action. Right now, Emory trails Manti by 2 games for 3rd place in the division, and currently 1 game better than San Juan in the loss column. Emory will continue the final stretch of the season Wednesday as they play host to the Grand Red Devils in the final home game of the season before taking on San Juan on the road on Friday. And we end by moving over to junior college basketball. Saturday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the USU Eastern men's basketball squad suffered an 88-73 loss to CSI, the College of Southern Idaho. USU Eastern led 42-39 at the end of the first half, but a mid-second half run by Southern Idaho was too much to overcome. The loss for USU Eastern comes despite a 26-point performance from Rafael Montero. Landon Swartz chipped in with 18. Now, the USU Eastern women's squad recorded a victory in overtime. They defeated CSI 93-90. That game was also on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Caitlin Tulono returned to the lineup after suffering a knee injury, scoring 23 points, while Brooklyn Barris finished with 18, and Alyssa Crumley chipped in with 16. You can watch both of these games on demand by visiting KOALITV.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to start a brand new week of the Coach's Corner off by talking high school wrestling. Well, we're getting down to it in the winter sports season. Wrestling and swimming will actually wrap up the entire year this Friday and Saturday. But in order to get to the state championship in wrestling, you had to qualify through divisionals, which took place this past Saturday. Emory did fantastic. They had 18 kids participate, 15 qualified for the state championship meet. And joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about that, we have Coach Kurt Christiansen. Coach, always fun to get you on and talk about the program. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I had a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, we're getting down to it. Now we're in the final week of the wrestling season. You guys take 18 individuals down to the Sevier Valley Center in Richfield for the divisional tournament, and you guys will return 15 of those 18 to the state championship this weekend. I mean, that's a large number to qualify, Coach.
Yeah, you know what? Our percentage were good where wrestling was good. We wrestled really, really good in the early rounds right through quarterfinals. You know, we pushed 9 into the semifinals and got 4 into the finals. And wrestling was tough in the finals. The ones we lost, I think, were really going to be a preview for next week's state championship matches. It's going to give us a chance to study some film and come back ready for some big wins.
Coach, let's talk about some of the big placers. First off, A.C. Reeve goes right through the divisional tournament, does not lose a single match. He finishes a perfect 3-0 first place, the lone first place finish for you guys over the weekend, but he definitely took care of business.
Yeah, he stepped up and wrestled tough. He wrestled smart and he wrestled hard, and he had a dominant performance this weekend. It was the ball.
Outside of that, in that same weight class at 285, Drake Hoffman finishes 3rd at 3-1. I mean, that's a lot of positives going into the state championship tournament, the fact that you guys are so dominant at 285.
Yeah, you know what? We knocked out a lot of team points there just from holding off our competition at that weight class and at the other weight classes where I knocked 2 into the state finals. Those JV kids really did well for us, and I'm really proud of them. Tell you what, Drake Hoffman had a rematch with the Morgan kid for 3rd and 4th, the kid that took him out of the championship rounds. You know, in semifinal, we lost there and got bumped down into consolation, or quarterfinal. And so Drake battled through consolation to come back to beat the kid who took him out of the championship rounds. Now, you know what? We lost 4-2. In that match, we were down 4-2 and in a really tight spot, and we actually got passed out. Drake wrestled with so much heart that he would not turn over on his back, and he lost his wind and went unconscious on us for a second, and he had to take a minute and get his bearing, and he came back for an upset and a pin, which gets us another set of team points there. and he just battled hard. That kid is a competitor, and he gets the match of the weekend for us. It was amazing. We had a ball watching that one.
Outside of the 285 weight class, Coach, you guys also had a couple of top performers. I mean, Newt Obison finishes second. McKay Macarello finishes second. Also, I believe Corby Christiansen finished second. So you guys had a group of individuals get into the championship round as well. So, I mean, it wasn't just the 285-pound weight class. I mean, you guys had some really compelling wrestling.
No, we had some dominant performances. And, you know, those four right there are the ones I've been telling you all year got a shot at the state title. And the other one that still has a shot at the state title is Gus Dalton, who finished third for us. We've got really five. If things go well for us and we wrestle to our ability and learn from the little things that we found out this weekend on those competitors that we can do a little bit better, we could very well push five into the finals and have a few state champions out of the deal this year. I'm really excited about this team. I have been all year, you know that. And if they come to wrestle like I know they can, we're going to have us a blast this weekend.
And 15 out of those 18 kids qualified, Coach. Is that something that you expected? Did you expect that number to be higher, or is that about what you thought?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. There was a couple surprises there. Those JV kids, they wrestled their tails off, and they battled their way into the state tournament, and I'm just proud of them. They really showed up to wrestle. And one that's really showed up and dominated for us is Zach World. You know, he had a third-place finish as well, and he wrestled at the top of his ability this weekend. And he did well. I mean, I'm really tickled to see where he landed, and he puts himself in a really good position to battle his way into the medal rounds in the state finals as well. So I'm really tickled to see what Zach was able to do. And those kids, they wrestled good. I mean, we made a few mistakes. Aiden Mortensen was seconds away from a win to qualify himself for a state title and just turned the wrong direction, you know. And as a freshman wrestling seniors and juniors, man, what a stud he is. We're really looking forward to see what he can take care of, going forward with his wrestling career as a freshman at 138 pounds. Like I told those guys when they came in, he and Breyer both at the same weight class, both as freshmen. I just kind of told them to plan on getting beat up for 2 years before you start winning a lot of matches. And boy, did they turn around and surprise me. You know, Breyer battles his way into medals in the divisional tournament, and he's actually set up well. If he wrestles as good as he can, he'll probably be in the medals at the state tournament. You know, I fully expect him to medal. And, one little mistake and Aiden's in, you know. So I got what I expected and then some. So that's – a coach can't feel anything but happy about that, you know.
Sure, sure. Again, our guest right now is Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Sport and Wrestling Team. Coach, now that you have 15 of those 18 kids going to state, how much better is that for preparation the week leading up? Because I know there are times where you only have a few kids going, and, you know, it's kind of no man's land for some of those kids who are just trying to prepare the ones for going to state. Now you basically have your entire team going to state.
Yeah, you know what? And I fully expect those three that didn't make it, and the other three that have been sticking around with us and helping them prepare for the divisional tournament to go on and come to practice and work their tails off and get these kids prepared for the state tournament. Of course, this week is going to be a couple of hard practices right here at the beginning of the week to keep ourselves fit and really work on those finer points of our technique that are going to be the keys to beating these opponents that have beat us before, and we fully expect to come back and wrestle better at the state finals than we did at divisionals. You know, I think we're peaking these kids right at the right time, and if we can come into that state tournament on fire like we were at divisionals, and wrestle just a hair better, in that semifinal match, we're gonna dominate. We're gonna have fun.
Did you get a chance to watch the 3AA classification, Coach? And if you did, how does it match up? How did the two divisions match up going into the state tournament this weekend?
You know, let me tell you honestly, in most of the division, in most of the weight classes where we have wrestlers, I'm going to tell you our division's a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true in all weight classes, but for the most part, our division was pretty darn tough. You know, at 152, Gus Dalton's weight, he finishes third. And no one from the other side has beat those three. You know, at 152, or excuse me, at 170, there's one dominant wrestler on the other side, the Tanner Shields from Delta, that Newt will meet in the semifinals. Other than that, you know, the next three were in our division. You know, at Corby's weight class, there'll be two pretty dominant wrestlers down there at 113. You know, one dominant wrestler at 106 on the other side. I really expect Dwayne and Jaron at 106 to battle their way right to about the same spot. And if they have good semifinal matches, they could end up in a final. You know, those two are wrestling tough, and their wrestle off for third and fourth was bittersweet once again. We've seen that match several times throughout the season, at tournaments and at home, and those two have pushed themselves to great heights. You know, I'm trying to think, at 120, we have the dominant wrestler in our weight class that Drake saw in the quarterfinal. So we're on the opposite side of him now. So Drake Mangum may have a better shot at getting into a finals, into medal rounds. At 132, we have the dominant wrestler. At 138, we have the dominant wrestler on our weight, on our side, that took us out. So, I mean, really, the way we match up, I think coming out of divisionals, we're kind of about right where we want to be. Short of a couple of wrestlers that'll have that number one seed in the first or second round. You know, our varsity kids are set up pretty good. Our JV kids, with them lower seeds coming out of divisionals, they're going to have a tough row to hoe. And they're going to have to battle through consolation rounds and win us some team points. But I'm really excited about this tournament coming up. I think we've got as good a shot as anybody at driving four or five into the state finals and coming out with a few state titles.
Looking forward to it, definitely, Coach. We'll recap again next week. It's been a fun season up to this point. Best of luck in the state championship tournament this weekend, and as always, it's a pleasure to get you on.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, that's Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory High School wrestling team, taking out the time to give us an update on the divisional meet, which again took place this past Friday and Saturday in Richfield. And now we'll gear up for the state championship meet this Friday and Saturday at Utah Valley in Orem. We've got a break for just a moment. More coming up when we return. We're going to talk national sports. The NFL football season is over. We had a lot of it here on KOAL this year. We had Thursday night football, had the Super Bowl last night, and now we head into the offseason, and we're 8 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting for Major League Baseball. Throw that out there. 8 days away. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the game. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, going over the aftermath now of Super Bowl 52. Which really, at this point in time, it's more fun to talk about that than it is the actual game itself. Because you've heard everything that you need to know about that game. Plus, of course, you watched it last night, unless you were living under a rock. One thing that always surprises me is the next day, people seem really interested in talking about the halftime show, the national anthem, and, morons acting like morons in the city, basically tearing it down to the ground. Like, that's what people, for some reason, they want to talk about that. Just my view here. I don't give a hoot about the halftime show. I thought it was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. Pink singing the national anthem, she was great. No problem with that. And as far as the idiots that were tearing down Philadelphia last night, morons. I mean, really, that I think it's that simple. The game itself was extremely entertaining. It was sloppy, but it was entertaining. You agree with that? I mean, that's a fair assessment, right?
Yeah, it wasn't one of the greatest games ever. It was entertaining. I like defensive football, and that was a shootout last night. But yeah, it was a fun game. It wasn't great by all means.
As far as ranking the Patriot Super Bowls, and this was part of the reason why I said, you know what, don't write off Philadelphia, because they had a dynamic defense going in. I thought they were playing great defense. Look at what they did to Atlanta. Look at what they did to Minnesota. Their defense was playing off the charts at that particular time. And the Patriots always seem to either play up or down to their competition in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the case. And so comparing it to last year's Super Bowl was bananas. It was insane. It was one of the greatest comebacks in the history of football. Probably was the greatest comeback in the history of football. This year's Super Bowl does not compare to last year's. Where would you rank it among the 8 Super Bowls that Tom Brady has played in?
It's a good question.
His biggest win was against the greatest show on turf. Nobody can convince me otherwise. That started the dynasty.
This is probably down the list. I would rank it 8.
See that? So the win over the Rams was his biggest. The best win was probably the Atlanta, just because not only did he get number 5, but at the same time they were down 28-3. I think we all expected them to take care of business against Carolina. I think everyone thought that they would actually beat Philadelphia the first time.
Carolina, yeah.
So, you know, it was a weird game last night. It really was. It was a strange game.
You never felt
game.
New England had control, or even when they took the lead, you just kind of felt like, yeah, but they're not going to win.
I can't lie. When they got the ball back, when Brady, before the strip sack, I thought New England had Philadelphia right where they wanted him. And
Two
I expected
minutes.
Tom Brady to take the ball down the field and set up a Gostkowski field goal to win the game. That's what I was thinking at that point in time.
I didn't. Even when they had the ball back, I just felt like, either if they go down and score, their defense isn't going to stop Philadelphia. Philadelphia will march right down the field and score again.
Well, let's talk about the aftermath of this game. Because again, Nick Foles, your Super Bowl MVP, awesome story. A guy who was once traded from Philadelphia to St. Louis, was a train wreck in St. Louis. Rams tried to move him, couldn't cut him. He goes to Kansas City, wanted to play for Andy Reid. He almost quit the game of football, but decides, you know what, I want to play for Andy Reid. Goes to Kansas City, it doesn't work out there. He plays behind Alex Smith. He goes back to Philadelphia. Of course, the backup quarterback for Carson Wentz. Wentz goes down against the Rams. Again, that's a reoccurring theme here for some reason. And then Foles comes in and just coasts all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's an amazing story when you think about it. Nick Foles is the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
It's just crazy how sports turned out, how this guy wanted to quit football, didn't even want to play, went out camping or whatever it was with his brother-in-law, came back, and now look at him. He's going to get a huge contract probably next year, maybe even this year if things work out in his favor, and now he's the MVP.
Okay, so he goes 28-43, 373 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, quarterback rating of 106. Here's a very interesting stat. He has the highest quarterback rating in NFL postseason history. Did you see this stat?
I didn't.
The highest quarterback rating in postseason history now belongs to Nick Foles because he was unbelievable in the NFC Championship game and he was great in the Super Bowl. Second on that list is Jeff Hostetler. And I think there's fair comparisons between these two. Nick Foles at 113.2, Jeff Hostetler at 112. Bart Starr would be next, then Kurt Warner, then Matt Ryan, then Drew Brees. That's interesting. The question now remains, and remember, Hostetler blew up, he got a big contract, moved on, and was very average after winning a Super Bowl. The same question I think will be asked now with Nick Foles. So here you go. What do the Eagles do with Nick Foles going into the offseason?
You keep him because you don't know if Carson Wentz is going to be fully healthy or not. You still have Nick Foles under contract for one more year, so you keep him. He's your backup.
He signed for only one more year. I agree with you. I don't think you can move on from this guy right now. Now, that could bite you in the butt because I get it. His stock is at an all-time high right now. There's no way Nick Foles' stock could possibly be as high as it is right now. But in my mind, the trade market is set for quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo fetched a second rounder. Nick Foles is not fetching a second or first rounder. He's not.
Nope.
There's no way. Jimmy Garoppolo was the most sought-after backup quarterback in the NFL. He got a second-round pick. Alex Smith was worth a third-round pick. To me, Nick Foles falls right in between the two, so he's probably worth a third-round pick. There's no way I'm moving that guy for a third-round pick. No way. Now, if somebody feels froggy and they offer you a first-round pick, you probably have to consider it.
Yeah, if someone calls and they're desperate and, for the lack of better terms, dumb, and to give you a first-round pick, if you're Philadelphia, you're like, okay, thanks, and you take it.
You listen to trade offers.
Yeah, you have to.
You don't seek trade offers, but you listen to trade offers.
Yeah, because there's teams desperate out there, like maybe Cleveland or Buffalo or the Jets. Someone out there is desperate for a quarterback, so they might jump at the chance to offer you a first-round pick.
Would you trade him? You said no.
I say no, because I don't know how Carson Wentz, if he's going to be fully healthy or ready for the season, so no.
You know, and that's the thing. I think Carson Wentz's injury was a little bit worse than everyone originally had anticipated. And it's the first major injury of this guy's career. I love Carson Wentz. Look, going back to the NFL draft, I said I would have went with Wentz over Goff just based on his physical stature. Like, I felt like he was more up to the task of taking a pounding. And before Philadelphia had made the trade to move up to number two, you expected whoever it was, one or two, if it's going to be Goff or Wentz, you expected one of those two guys, both of those guys, to take a pounding. Now, Philadelphia was in a little bit of a different situation. They were better fit. But I just like Wentz's stature.
Mm-hmm.
Wentz, throw the idea out of trading Carson Wentz because it's not happening. I mean, that's ridiculous. Nick Foles is almost 30 years old. You're not trading Carson Wentz. But I get the fact that Nick Foles' stock is higher right now than it will ever be. I get that. I don't think you get a second-round pick for him. I really don't.
I don't either. You might get offered a third or fourth. And at that point, no, you don't take that.
So are the Eagles set up to, in your mind, and again, this is something else that you got to consider. You try to use pieces that aren't everyday pieces to complete your team. Like, I think the Eagles are a pretty complete team. Obviously, they're Super Bowl champs, right? I mean, they lost their MVP caliber quarterback, and they still found a way to win the Super Bowl. But at the same time, it was never overwhelming, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
At no point in time did I look at the Philadelphia Eagles, even when Wentz was playing, and say, nobody's beating that team. I never said that. Because you had a terrific defense in Minnesota, you had Drew Brees in New Orleans, you had the most high-profile offense in the NFL in Los Angeles, and you had Atlanta, who I thought was a very good football team, and they could definitely cause some problems coming off of a Super Bowl loss last year. I never looked at Philly as saying, that right there is the team to beat. So you use Foles to try to build a more complete team. I get that logic right there. The way they are currently constructed, are the Eagles set up to win multiple Super Bowls with this regime under Doug Peterson?
They got all their young talent under contract. So, yeah, they're set up nicely to maybe win another one here in the next few years. So, yeah, I like the way that Philadelphia is set up.
Hard to repeat in the NFL.
Hard. Yeah, really hard. And they probably don't repeat, but they can get 2 out of 3, maybe.
Boy, it's been almost 15 years since we've had a repeat champion, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't happen in the NFL. It's just too many changing parts in the NFL.
And it's a one-game playoff.
Yeah, because anything can happen. You seen that last night.
Yeah, that definitely matters. Nick Foles will be a Philadelphia Eagle next year. Yes or no?
Yes.
I don't think they trade him.
No.
I really don't.
Can't.
It's a fun storyline to talk about, though. Because it's a scenario that you just don't see very often. It's the last time we had a backup quarterback win the Super Bowl. Tom Brady.
Tom Brady beat the Rams.
That was the last time we had a backup quarterback win the Super Bowl. Before that, it was Kurt Warner in 99. It just doesn't happen very often. So it is a fun story. I don't know if it's ever happened where you had someone the age of Carson Wentz go down and a veteran who could be considered a journeyman steps in and takes his team to the Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
It is a very, very rare occurrence. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Talked about the Eagles and what's next for them last segment. Asked this question at the beginning of the show. Are the Patriots done? Is that it? Because every dynasty has to come to an end eventually. And this started back in 2002 They've gone to 8 Super Bowls since. They've won 5. It's an incredible run. Tom Brady will be 41 years old next year. Right, he'll be 41. Is this team done? Is the dynasty finished?
I'm going to say no, because Tom Brady's still there. We've seen what he did this year, and the AFC East is still a joke. There's no quarterbacks in the AFC East. If you look at the Jets, Dolphins, and Buffalo Bills, do any of those teams scare you? No, they're going to win the division. And more than likely, if they win the division, they're going to have a home field. The
Bills are close.
Yeah, Buffalo's close. They'll have another bye. So all they really do is need one more win to get the AFC Championship. So no, I don't think it's done yet. Until the other teams in the AFC East prove something, then no.
That's fair. That's a fair argument. I think it is. I don't think they'll win another Super Bowl. And that's the first time I've said that. I've picked the Patriots to win the Super Bowl. How many times on this show? Since we started?
I've picked them every year we've done the show.
I've been close right behind you. I'm not picking them to win the Super Bowl again. I say that because Tom Brady's a league MVP. I get that. But I see obvious slips in his game. That's no knock on Tom Brady. He'll be 41 years old next year. I do see some slippage in his game. But beyond that, there's talk now of Rob Gronkowski possibly being done. They won a Super Bowl without the Gronk. Yeah, you can go ahead and throw that out there. That's fine. There's no contingency plan for Brady. And that's how you have to look at dynasties, okay? So I made the reference to the San Antonio Spurs at the beginning of the show. And I think that's a relevant comparison. But pieces of San Antonio started to go opposite directions or retire. And the pieces that San Antonio brought in to fill the void haven't necessarily panned out. LaMarcus Aldridge was the heir apparent of Tim Duncan, right? That's why they brought him in.
Yep.
Hasn't worked out, has it? Okay. Pau Gasol hasn't worked out, has it? I mean, he's an older guy. And I'm just using the Spurs as an example because they've been around for as long as the Patriots have in terms of competitive basketball. The contingency plan for Tom Brady was Jimmy Garoppolo. And the current CBA did not allow New England to hang on to him any much longer. They couldn't. They had to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo. You no longer have a contingency plan there for a 41-year-old quarterback. I'm not saying that Tom Brady is going to be bad next year because he's 41. I'm saying that with each year, injury chances will increase because he's 41, taking hits from 24, 25-year-old kids that continue to get bigger and faster than ever.
Took a lot of hits this year.
Took a lot of hits. More hits this year than he ever has, right?
Yep.
That's a problem. Okay, and if you were to lose Gronkowski, if he was to retire, that's a problem. Because when he is available, he's one of the greatest tight ends of all time.
Seen it last night.
When you lose your defensive coordinator and Matt Patricia, a guy who has been with this franchise for a very long time, he's gone. I would expect them to lose Josh McDaniels. When Bill Belichick decides to hang it up, the contingency plans in New England are not there. And the problem is they're getting older, and when players win, they typically leave for more money. That's a fact. That's what happens in professional sports. I don't see the Patriots winning another Super Bowl with this core. I could be wrong on that. I'm just saying that the odds are greatly against the Patriots now that Tom Brady is 41 years old. Your coordinators on the offense and defensive side are leaving. You got a tight end that's thinking of retiring. The defense was not that great to begin with. They brought in James Harrison this year. It was a desperation move. We said it when they signed him.
Very desperate.
There's holes there. That's my problem with New England. Winning the division, I agree with you there. Outside of Buffalo, nobody strikes fear into the Patriots right now in that division. But the rest of the AFC, yeah, there's some pretty good football teams around there.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh isn't going anywhere.
No, they're the most talented team probably in football, Pittsburgh.
Jacksonville isn't going anywhere.
They're going to only get better, and if they make a run maybe at a Kirk Cousins at quarterback and try to upgrade there or whatever they do, yeah, they're dangerous too.
There's some good, really good football in the AFC. I hate to say it, but I do believe that the dynasty, the expectation of winning the assumption that they're going to be there in the AFC every year, it's gone now. I think this was it for him. I don't think Brady gets to Super Bowl number 6 in New England. I don't.
It's hard for me not to agree with you, but as long as Brady and Belichick are there, I'm going to say they have one more in them, and it depends on what they do in this offseason.
That's true, too.
They have to go out and get a pass rusher. They have to. Dante Hightower will come back. They missed him greatly. They got to improve the cornerback situation because Malcolm Butler is going to leave.
Yep.
They need offensive line help.
Yep.
And they're going to lose probably one of the running backs, Deion Lewis, is probably going to leave. So
that's a lot of
pieces. But then there's,
but they're a system.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put it past Bill Belichick to go out there and get like a Jarvis Landry. I wouldn't.
Because team up with Brandon Cooks?
Yeah, because Danny Amendola is a free agent.
Don't forget about Julian Edelman.
Yeah, and Julian Edelman's coming back, so if you get maybe a Jarvis Landry with Brandon Cooks, I mean, your offense was already on fire, so it's the defensive side of the football where they have to improve.
Fun topic. Just not enough time on the show today to kind of dissect everything that's going into New England, but look, plenty of time now because between now and April, I mean, it's all free agent talk. The beginning of the next season will begin on March 14th. A lot of hearsay going on over the next couple of days. We'll have plenty much more NFL football to talk about. I want to thank Coach Kirk Christiansen for taking out the time to join us on the show today. Tomorrow, we are going to be joined by Coach Brock Fawcett of the Corbin High School wrestling team. And we'll talk more NFL, little Major League Baseball. We'll throw in some NBAs, but we're going to bounce all the way around tomorrow. He is Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.